Hey there, everybody. It is Wednesday, March 14th, 2012, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm Ken. As always, you can drop us a line, get in touch with us by sending an email to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. And of course, go to the Facebook. We know you have an account. Type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. We are welcoming a guest back to the show. Hey, first guest, are you ready to go?
I am.
Let me introduce you. Dr. Frankie Bishan has specialized in working with the LGBT community and specifically with couples and individuals with relational difficulties. After 9 years of clinical experience, Dr. Frankie sought a less formal and more dynamic setting to apply her talents. She followed her passion of connecting people and bringing happiness to their lives by becoming a professional matchmaker. Dr. Frankie launched Little Gay Book and quickly became the premier lesbian matchmaker and bisexual matchmaker in the San Francisco Bay Area, Los Angeles, and New York, and also, I assume, Southern Vermont by the end of this episode. Dr. Frankie Bishan, welcome back to The Show Is So Gay.
Wow, what an introduction. Thank you, Ken.
That's all you.
Thanks for having me on again.
It's a thrill to have you back, because we can never run out of things to talk about to solve the world's relationship difficulties.
Absolutely.
I agree. Do you hear new issues, or is it all just kind of rehashing the same core concepts? Or are there new things that come up that you're like, whoa, that's a new thing that we're dealing with?
The latest has been people feeling really disillusioned by online dating.
I bet.
Lots of questions around that and how to be successful and why do they feel like it's failing and that sort of thing.
What would success look like with online dating?
Being able to learn how to use it effectively and not allowing it to take over your life, being very sort of strategic about how you approach online dating, not spending a lot of time writing back and forth, sort of quickly just getting to the point of meeting for a coffee, keeping it brief. And I think people really get caught up with spending way too much time online. And I think also their expectations are sort of unrealistic. And they start to shop and instead of slowing down and really kind of giving people a chance instead of thinking about what's going to be, you know, what's right around the corner. Maybe I should just keep moving on because there's something around the corner. There's all of this kind of curiosity that I think ends up sabotaging ourselves.
Do you discourage it, or are you a fan of online dating if people use it effectively?
I'm a fan of it if it's used effectively, absolutely. It's another tool.
It's another tool.
People, absolutely.
Because we've talked about some of these things before. It's not just finding someone online, but then how do you describe your relationship on Facebook? When is it appropriate to change your relationship status on Facebook?
That's a good one. Wow, the drama that ensues, right, that comes up after you change your status on Facebook.
Why does his status still say single, Dr. Frankie Bishan? When will he change it?
Yes, when will he change it? You know, I think it's important. I feel like we're all out there now with social media. I feel like we're not that private anymore. There's so much that's just hanging out there. And I think when you decide that you've made a final decision and you're not vacillating, you know what I mean, going back and forth between are we together, are we not, are we together, are we not. If you finally make a decision, then it's good to make put it out there that it's over and you're free and you're open to dating.
And should you let the other person know that?
I think that would be nice.
So you're a fan of communication.
100%.
100%.
I know that's a surprise, Ken.
Well, we should back up a step. We launched right in, but we should back up a step and remind people how you came to this field. It's a very specific line of work that you do that would not occur to everybody. Where did this manifest in you?
So I have been drawn to people my whole life. I'm a people person. I love to interact with people. I love communication. I love to connect with people. So early on, from a young age, I was doing matchmaking just within my, you know, my group of friends. And I actually introduced my father to my stepmother, and they've been together for like 25 years now.
That's fantastic.
So that's it started, and I think I was 13 or 14 at the time. So I was pretty young, and because I'm such a people person, I was drawn to really wanting to help people emotionally, and I went into the field of clinical psychology. And I worked in the field for about 10 years and decided to launch Little Gay Book about 3.5 years ago because this is something I feel so passionate about, and I feel like with my clinical experience and, you know, the education and the exposure that I've had, aside from my natural talent and gift and intuition to really get a sense of really what's going to work for people, I decided to launch a little gay book, and it's been amazing. It's been wonderful.
Now, I have learned since you've last been on the show, who knew? Do you know there's all these other matchmakers out there?
I know. There so are. Every day there are new people sort of sprouting because online dating is just not working as well as it was. So,
what voice do you bring to the table that they're not going to find someplace else?
So I specifically focus on the lesbian and bisexual community,
okay,
which makes me unique because there's very few people that do that in this country.
Okay.
I'm also a clinical psychologist, which makes me even more unique. I don't know any matchmaker out there that has a doctorate in clinical psychology. So I take it to the next level. I'm looking at behavior. I'm looking at personality traits. I'm able to look at the minutiae that other people. So I sort of wear a different lens, right? Because of my education and experience. So that makes me unique as well. I'm also a lesbian, and I've been with my partner for nearly 10 years now, and I've got twins that are 6 years old. They're almost seven. So I know personally what it's like to be in a long-term relationship, and I have faced the challenges that I often try to answer for people, that I often receive in, you know, in my column at CurveMag.com for Curve Magazine. I write, and people submit questions all the time. And a lot of the questions that they're asking, I don't only think about it in terms of sort of the literature, but I also am thinking about it in terms of my own personal experience.
So you launched Little Gay Book. What do you remember about client number one?
Client number one. So I remember feeling pretty intimidated because she was somebody very influential in the community, and I felt like she really sort of had high hopes for me to be, you know, successful in finding her a partner, and she was very, very particular and had a long, long list of must-haves, and I just thought to myself, oh my gosh, couldn't I have somebody a little less challenging for my first client? But it was, I love challenges, so I felt like, all right, here's my chance, and I'm going to take it, and I'm going to try to do the best that I can. And I did. I think she had a great experience. I did not find her a successful match. But nonetheless, I think she had a great experience. I think that she feels that she met really quality women through my service, and that to me is success. I want people to have good experiences, and when they come out of it, feel like they have a better sense of what they, you know, want versus what they need. Because I think we all have this really clear idea about what we want, and not necessarily do we know what we need.
Right. Do you have people coming in saying, you know, I just want to be with someone, so no criteria, help me out?
Almost never.
Almost never.
No.
But it sounds like you wouldn't even want it that way.
No, that would be concerning to me. I mean, if any extreme is a little concerning to me. So I think somebody in the middle where they're like, you know, I want these three things, ideally. But when they come in with a long list, it's like 10, 15 things, it's like, all right, let's look at this more closely, because realistically, this person doesn't exist, all in one person.
Right. Now, because there's been such the success of the millionaire matchmaker, and she occasionally, although I can't remember, and I've seen many an episode of Millionaire Matchmaker, I can't for the life of me remember an episode that she did. She's done episodes setting up men. I can't think of an episode she did setting up women.
Once she set up a bisexual woman.
How'd that work out?
I don't think it was successful.
Okay. So they should be going to Little Gay Book, the millionaires.
Exactly.
That's fine.
I mean, it's different, right? I mean, heterosexual matchmaking is different than LGBT matchmaking in that there's certain things that I ask my clients that a heterosexual matchmaker is just not going to know about.
Tell me.
Okay.
I think people might not know the difference because they're thinking, all right, you just chose a specific population. But what I'm hearing you saying is it's a completely different craft.
I mean, certain things that just pertain to our community. Understanding, for example, you know, do you identify as top, bottom, switch, or versatile?
Right.
Like, a heterosexual matchmaker is not necessarily going to know. That's really a really important question to ask.
Yeah. Now, what about, is it a negotiable or a non-negotiable to be with someone who's in the closet?
So it depends. That's a question that I ask in my consultation process, which is a 90-minute meeting that I have with everybody that I work with in person. And you know, it's an important question to ask. Most people want to be with somebody who's comfortable with their sexuality, and out.
Right.
Some people, you know, I work with attorneys, sometimes they don't feel comfortable being completely out in the law firm.
Right.
And that's okay. There are other clients that just say, no way, they have to be completely out in their life.
Right. Now, I had people write in questions for you, because anytime it's your second time on the show, you get questions from the audience.
I love it.
Yeah. So, one of our listeners wrote in and said, how do you deal with someone of a different religion? I don't have a problem with the person I'm dating having a different religion, but my parents do.
Yeah. I mean, you have to really think about who this is about. I mean, it's really about you finding somebody that's compatible for you. It's not your parents, right, that are going to be dating this person. It's you. So I think it's important to help your parents understand that, you know, this is somebody you care about, and granted, they don't necessarily approve of this person's religion, but it doesn't mean that just because they have a different religion that it's going to necessarily influence your own religion, right?
Right.
So I think the fear is that somehow this person's going to change the way, you know, their child feels or believes, their belief system. I think it's hard enough to find somebody that we feel compatible with. And then when we have to start considering our extended family and our parents and all that kind of stuff, it makes it even more challenging. And I think at the end of the day, it's about us being happy.
It's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure out there.
It is.
And then this, I love this question. My marriage ended 6 months ago. I am ready to start dating again, but my friends tell me I'm not ready. How do I negotiate this?
We really know ourselves, and I think our friends can definitely be a resource, but should we 100% go with what they say? Not always, right? So I think you need to trust your gut instinct. And if your gut is telling you that you're ready, I think you need to take the plunge. And you'll know when you're on a date, when you're on that first date, and you're sitting across from this person, and you're not able to focus, and you're thinking about everything else under the sun but tuning into this person and what they have to say, that may indicate you're not ready.
Yeah.
Or maybe you're just not attracted to this person. But I think you need to try it in order to see. To just assume you're not ready and take your friend's word for it, I don't know. I don't know if that's the best bet.
What would you generally tell people after they've ended a relationship? I know some people have like these crazy formulas where every year of the relationship is, you have to times 9 months, and I don't know, that's a little scary to me.
You know, it depends on how long you were in the relationship. It depends at what point in the relationship did you start to feel like this, you know, because a lot of people stay in relationships much longer than they should. And they hang on because it's really hard for us to let go. And we like things that are familiar and comfortable. So it's hard to let go. So I think it really depends. I can't give you a number, but I would say if you're in a relationship that's, you were in for a couple years, I would take 6 months off, you know? 6 months to take some time for yourself, to allow yourself to sort of metabolize what went wrong, what went right, why did it fail.
Yeah.
Focus on sort of improving yourself. Use that time for self-improvement. Engage in self-care. Try to think about how you can become healthier. Focus on yourself and boosting your self-esteem. And when you feel like you're at your best, step out, you know, and put yourself out there. If you've been in a marriage for 10 years, 15 years, 6 months isn't going to be enough. You see what I mean?
Yeah. Absolutely. And then last question. I love when they say, Dear Dr. Frankie, as if they were writing right to you, and they are because they're asking you the question. Dear Dr. Frankie, help me decide whether or not I should take the plunge to move across the country to be with, now this is a man, but that's okay because, you know,
sure,
we're going for the general concepts, to be with this man even though there is no job there waiting for me. Signed, should I take the plunge?
You know, that's like, just thinking about that, that's scary, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we need stability, we need security, a sense of security, and I'm guessing that they've been living apart, and I don't know if they met online, and,
right,
and he's considering moving across the country to have a relationship with this person where there's no support system.
Oy.
The support system is huge.
Huge.
The number one most important thing that we have in life that keeps us grounded and stable. So it's something to really think about. I'm not going to say that it's not a good idea, but I think you need to go in with great caution.
Right.
You know, just be really careful about making that decision. And maybe you can create a support system before. You know what I mean? Like, try to figure out, is there somebody that you know that lives there? Maybe find a job before you get there, before you move there, so you have something that to hold on to in case the relationship doesn't work out.
Because that's got to be a little scary. It's like, well, this seems like a good relationship and it could be great, but I got to balance that out with it being a bad economy.
Exactly. Exactly.
So now, first dates, I would imagine, are a source of much anxiety for your clients.
A lot of anxiety, yes.
How do you settle them down? Is there general advice that we tell people for a first date?
Yeah, so I give them my 12 tips for successful first dates.
Love it.
So, I mean, it's basic, you know, but it's something that they can read and review before they go on the date. And it's the kind of things where it's like, before the date, you know, you can consider buying a new shirt or wearing a new perfume or, you know, make sure to take a shower before and don't go on a date right after a long day of work. You know, when you're kind of drained and you're going from working and then going to a date, it's just not, you want to freshen yourself up. You want to keep an open mind, you know, try not to be critical, try to be present and mindful, try to just really listen and also ask questions, but make sure that there's, you know, it's like a volley where you're not dominating the conversation, where you're not interviewing the person.
Right, right.
I think we can easily fall into that because we feel anxious and we start asking a lot of questions. And I think it's important to kind of slow down. Make sure to put your cell phone away.
Don't leave your cell phone
on the table.
I don't even bring it, right?
Exactly.
I don't want to bring it.
So make sure to just turn it off, put it in your bag. It does not need to be out. And if it absolutely does, say you have children and you feel like they're with a babysitter and it absolutely needs to be out, then let the person know, right, that I you know, have a babysitter and this is why I have it out, just to be respectful. You know, make sure, you know, if you had a great time, the date was really great and you feel like there was a connection, it's okay to communicate that. It's a good idea to communicate that and maybe even convey an interest in getting together again for a second date. And you want to keep it light when at the end of the date, you know, a nice hug and a kiss on the cheek. You don't want to be making out
right.
or getting into the backseat of your car. That's kind of going to sabotage things.
Right.
So I don't recommend that, right?
Is it okay for me to write down these tips on my hand and subtly look at them?
Ooh. If you absolutely need to, I mean, can you go to the bathroom and look at them, review them?
I hear what you're saying, and that might be a better option.
Yes, because it's embarrassing. You don't want to draw attention to yourself in that way.
Right.
Go to the bathroom and review them. Put them in your pocket. Also, limit your alcohol use. I think it's just easy to, like, start to, you know, feel anxious and drink one drink, and then you're like, oh, why don't I just have another? It's going well. And by the time you realize that you've had four drinks.
Exactly.
Which, no more than two drinks. Two is absolutely enough.
Well, and I would imagine it's a challenge. Now, you know, you work with clients in New York and LA and San Francisco, so there is it's a little bit easier, I would assume, to go out and pick a place to go to and not expect that you run into people that you know. I would imagine in some smaller places, like say here in Brattleboro, Vermont, if I wanted to take someone out and just get to know them, it's a little bit more difficult because odds are I'm going to run into all of these other people I know.
Yes. Yeah. So you might want to find a place that's like off the beaten path. You
there
might
you
want to even meet in another town, in another city, you know, because it is. It's true. I mean, it's a small community. You're going to bump into people potentially.
And that's a distraction. So now the date has gone well. I had a great time, and I told him, sir, maybe I shouldn't call him sir, I had a great time, really looking forward to getting together again. Are we still dealing with all of the rules about how long we wait to contact them?
No.
Come on.
If you, those rules annoy me. I'm sorry. Can you tell? No. It's like, wait a week. You don't want to look like you're desperate.
Right.
No. Scratch those off. Basically, when you walk away from that date, if you're feeling really good about it and you want to let them know, so you can text him, let him know. The next day you can call. I mean, you can either call or email. A lot of people I know, they'll text or they'll email.
Okay.
And they'll say, hey, they'll think about something that's coming up maybe next week. You know, whether it be an art exhibit or, you know, a movie or something that's coming out that they want to do with this person potentially. Suggest it.
Go in with a plan.
Exactly.
Look
Go
at
in
that.
With a plan.
Okay. And if they say no, how do we process that?
That's one of the risks, right? When
yeah.
you put yourself out there and you date, you run the risk of being rejected. I think that you got to try not to personalize it. Just think that this is kind of part of the experience of dating. And, you know, not everybody's for everybody,
right?
For everyone. So you just got to sort of pick yourself back up and move on.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, something that's specific to the gay community, as you said, there are these very specific nuggets of questions of, you know, whether or not the person is out. How much do we want to get at those answers, particularly if they're non-negotiables? How much do we want to get at those answers on the first date? Because I guess some folks would be nervous about waiting too long to find out, oh, crap, that's a non-negotiable.
I mean, a lot of these things, too, you can sort of sense in the way that they're presenting, right?
Yeah.
In the way that they, you can ask around it. You don't even have to necessarily directly ask that question. You could find out just like what they do, you know, what their profession is and sort of, I think it would be okay to say, are you out in, you know, professionally? I don't think that's a bad thing.
Okay.
I just like, for example, say you're somebody who wants to have a family. That's a deal breaker for you.
Yeah.
It's your first date. I mean, you want to know, right? Is this
right.
person open to having children? I think it's perfectly fine to ask.
Okay. Okay. So now I've had the best date. I assume I have a follow-up appointment with you, right? To tell you how it went.
Yes.
Okay. So I go in and I say, Dr. Frankie, I'm totally going to marry him. You say what?
Hold your horses.
But I'm going to marry him.
Hold your horses. Do you hear me? Slow it down. I'm excited that you are excited about him. I think that's awesome. Let's just slow down here. And what are your plans for, you know, moving forward? Did you already communicate to him that you're really interested? Because sometimes, even if it feels right and you're on the first date and you're feeling good about it, you can suggest doing something together in the future. Maybe if you're talking about an art opening or something that's happening in the near future, it's in conversation and you're feeling good about it. It's like, I think that'd be fun to go to together.
Yes, but
can I
couple that? I think it would be fun to go together with. Also, I was just wondering what your ring size is.
No.
Okay. So
that's
not on the table.
No, that's not on the table. Discussing exes isn't on the table.
Oh, well, that's very important because I would assume that there are a lot of people who bring that up.
It comes up a lot. Even when I tell my clients not to bring it up, it comes up. I think there's, you know, curiosity, you know, and they'll say to me, well, I wanted to know, has she had a long-term relationship?
Yeah.
And if so, how long? And why didn't it work out? You know, and I think that it's just a slippery slope, and it's a dangerous thing to bring up on a first date. I think you really want to keep it light. It can be a trigger for people. People don't really want to talk about failures, you know
right,
what I mean, and
right.
how things didn't work out for them. So you want to keep it positive and light. I think as you progress by the second or third date, it's okay to kind of start talking about that stuff to get a sense of whether they have experience in long-term relationships and that sort of thing. It's important to know that.
So we should wait until the second date before we look at surrogate mothers together.
No.
No.
So, yeah. So I think, okay, once you decide to be monogamous, and that should not happen for at least, I mean, I hate giving numbers because people stick to them, right? Like, you adhere to them, like, so I don't want to give a number, but it should be a few months, right? Even if you're going out four times in a month, right? Or five times in a month, it should be, you know, you've gone out 10 times.
Right.
Right? Before you decide you want to just focus on dating that person.
Well, it's just interesting, and I really respect your reluctance to give numbers because I think that you are in one of those professions. It's a little different than me being a college professor, and I'll give my students some advice, and maybe they'll do the reading, but they might not. Whereas for you, I would imagine that you have people taking notes and thinking, I need to do exactly what she said.
Exactly. Yeah, they stick to it. And it's like, I don't mean rigidly. You don't have to stick to it exactly. You know, it's exact to the guidelines that I'm saying. This is just sort of a guide.
Right.
It's a rough idea. So I just feel like, you know, by the second or third day, we should not be moving in together.
Okay.
We should not be talking about having a family together. We should just be getting to know one another.
Do you find yourself in the position of having to slow people down?
Yes.
Have you actually used the phrase, hold your horses, because that would be awesome.
Yes. Take the U-Haul phone number off of speed dial, you know?
No, I will take it off speed dial. There are more than enough friends that I can call on to help me move.
No.
Okay, I'm getting it wrong. I'm not getting it right. Now, what about age? We talk a lot about age in the gay community and how perhaps the anxiety is even greater, to find someone because if you're getting older, then obviously you're getting less attractive. Is that something that comes up a lot about people getting more anxious as they get older?
You know, I don't see that as much in the gay community, or at least in the lesbian community, as I do, I would say, in the heterosexual community. But there is a sense of, you know, wanting to settle down, for sure, that increases over time with age, for sure. And I think, I don't know, you know, I feel like there's a lot of people in the community that are open to dating people who are, you know, significantly older and significantly younger
mm-hmm.
that I see, which is nice because recent research, I think it's the cohort effect, which shows that, you know, as long as you're within a 12-year span, you're still within the same sort of pop culture worldview, sort of you'll be able to continue to, you know, be able to relate to one another.
Right.
When you get beyond 12 years, then it's just too, I guess they find that it's just too much of a span in time where you're not relating to one another because, you know, you don't like the same music.
Yeah.
You can't relate to the same, you know, politics and that kind of thing or history. That sort of stuff.
Now, we had Mariah Hansen on the show a few weeks ago, and we talked about the Dinosaur Weekend is coming up right there in California. Is that something that you would recommend to people to go to find someone? Or is it like, okay, that's too casual and it's going to be difficult because there are thousands of lesbians there?
It's like lesbian spring break.
Yes.
It is the ultimate lesbian spring break, and it's a tremendous amount of fun. Do I think that people should go there hunting for their life partner with that hope? I don't know. I don't think so. I think you should go there and just be open to having an amazing time, meeting a lot of women. And then maybe after Dinosaur weekend, stay in touch and see if something develops. Because during that weekend, it's just about partying and having,
right.
you know, being kids again, basically.
Now, Mariah, I should tell people, after the show, Mariah invited me to come to the Dyna. I think it would be too overwhelming for me.
It's quite overwhelming. yeah, maybe. I mean, I actually haven't been to Dinosaur. I was supposed to go last year, and last minute I had too much work to do, and I couldn't make it. But I hear that it's a lot of fun, and there are thousands and thousands of lesbians.
It might
be a little overwhelming.
I will watch the twins while you are there. I am hereby offering that. Now, one more piece of the puzzle. What would you say to, and I would imagine this has come up, so a woman comes in and says, look, we had a great first date, and I'm not going to marry her until the fifth date, so, you know, I'm holding my horses, but I'm really uncomfortable with the fact that she has been with men before.
Yeah, that comes up less frequently, I think, now, which is a nice shift because I think we're becoming more accepting.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that what I'm noticing in the community is that women just want to know that the person that they're dating wants to be with women, even if they identify as bisexual.
Yeah.
That they're clear on that, you know? I don't think they're that hung up or worried about the fact that they've, you know, they were married for 10 years or 15 years or whatever it is and have children with a man. As long as they're clear about wanting to be with a woman and they're not switching and going, you know, going back and forth frequently, I don't think that's too much of a concern. I don't hear it as much.
Well, but Dr. Frankie, she told me that it's not about me wanting to be with women right now. She said she wants to be with me. See, that's what would make me really uncomfortable is if someone said to me, it's, you know, yes, of course I want to be with men right now. Instead, they said, but I want to be with you. So gender is irrelevant.
Right, right. But yes, so they're saying, I want to be with you. I'm in love with you. And it's not about the gender or the sex. It's about you, right?
Right, right.
As a person. You know, and I think that, like I said earlier, there's risk, right?
Yeah.
We're taking a risk and you don't want to limit yourself, and all of this is based in fear, right? We fear that someone's going to leave us for somebody else.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter if it's a man or a woman. It's just nobody wants to be left.
Right.
And the likelihood, I mean, it's even if you're with somebody who's clear that they want to be with women and you're a lesbian and you know your girlfriend wants to be with women, there's still a risk that she'll meet another woman.
Yeah.
So I feel like we can't control all these variables, and we sort of just need to accept the fact that they're out there. And let's not focus on them.
There you go.
Let's instead focus on the fact that this person wants to be with me, specifically, regardless of, you know, whether I'm a man or a woman. That's,
so perhaps be in the moment. We could be in the moment.
Exactly. That's what I would like you to do.
And the other thing we could do is play some amazing music, because this is the part of the show where we talk about your selections, your musical selections for this week's episode.
Yeah.
Now, you have done this before, and I will remind you that there is an added pressure for you to analyze yourself based on your song selections, given the fact that it says doctor right before your name. So these,
I haven't really thought about this.
These need to be spot on, but of course, no pressure. So this is the part of the show where you tell our listening audience what these song selections say about you. And we'll just do a couple of them. So we are going to be playing right at the end of this interview, Rihanna's We Found Love. What does Rihanna's We Found Love say about Dr. Frankie Bishan?
I just thought it would be a nice, because I'm focusing on finding love, and I thought it would be a nice compliment to the show today.
There you go.
I also love the song.
So it's like a theme song.
Yeah, it's all right. Good. It's upbeat, you know.
All right.
Get you moving.
Now, on the other side of the spectrum, this is very curious, and we talked about this on last week's show, there's a new documentary out that's called Man to Man, and it's about gay men's search for love and search for Mr. Right, and where looks play a part in that. And one of your song selections for this week's episode is Chris Brown's Beautiful People.
Yeah.
What does Chris Brown's Beautiful People say about Dr. Frankie Bishan?
I just love the song. I don't know that I have really focused on the lyrics very much, Ken, so I don't want to. I like the beat. I love the song. It's uplifting. It makes me smile. It gives me a good vibe, and I like to roll with that. So that's why I chose that song.
Well, then I am going to press you a little further. Someone says, I had the best time. I had the best time on this date. Obviously, we're not going to get married till date 6. See, I even pushed it back a date for you as this interview goes on.
Thank you.
But I don't know. Physically, they're not exactly what I'm looking for.
But you had a great time?
The best time. I haven't connected with someone in that way in forever.
Okay. So is there chemistry there? Or are you just saying you had a great time, like you would have fun with a friend?
There was emotional chemistry. I'm just a little bit worried about the physical chemistry.
Okay. I would say continue dating.
Okay.
Yes. Give yourself the best chance, the best shot. Do not foreclose the deal before you're certain. If you're having a great time with this person and there's chemistry, but you're not sure about them physically and you just are really enjoying them, you need to go out again.
And do you feel like maybe my proposing marriage would be a good way to push through that?
100% no.
Okay.
Is that clear enough?
You're not coming down off that one, are you?
No.
I'm trying to be married by the end of the week.
Before you do anything, you need to call me.
Okay.
I will.
I have the number. I'm on it. I will talk to the twins about this. While you are at the Dyna, we will have a powwow about where I should take these relationships.
Yeah. And they're very clear about my thinking. They know. They hear me talk about it all the time. So much so, it's probably putting them to sleep. But
well, I don't know if it's putting them to sleep. I certainly, once they become perhaps 15, 16 years old, I would be a little bit nervous to bring someone home to meet you.
Yes, I think they should be nervous.
Oh, I love the fact that we'll be archiving this interview for them to listen to right around bar mitzvah time. We'll have them listen in and we'll go from there. All right, so where can folks go to learn all about the great things that you are doing?
So they can visit me at littlegaybook.com. So that's www.littlegaybook.com, and there's a ton of information on there. They can also go to Curve magazine, where they can submit a question for Dr. Frankie's Love Seat. And there are archives, months of submissions, awesome questions. So definitely read through those. They're really informative. And a lot of them, just because it's a, you know, lesbian magazine, a lot of my responses or my answers can be applied, and the questions can be applied to anybody.
Look at that.
You know what I mean? It doesn't just pertain to lesbians. It's just anybody who's in a relationship.
Have you had anyone call you from a first date?
Not on the first date.
Okay. That would be brilliant. I would do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, that would be great. I don't know. I mean, it would be definitely – I don't encourage it on the date, but – maybe after the date?
Okay. Because so you're saying it might not look good if I say, will you excuse me for a second? I have to call my matchmaker.
I don't think so.
All right.
No. But, you know, I'd appreciate hearing about it. I love hearing about dates. The good things, the bad things. Oh, and then one more thing. So I've been really getting into Twitter lately.
Oh, really?
So I want to encourage people to follow me on Twitter.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Relationship advice in a limited number of characters.
It's awesome. I'm becoming a bit obsessed.
All right, so we got to hold off on getting married right away. We're got to just enjoy ourselves and maybe take some of the pressure off.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And breathe. Make sure to breathe. And remember, it's supposed to be fun.
I don't understand
enjoyable.
What you mean. We have to decide the rest of our lives based on this first date.
Oh, God, anxiety.
We're gonna, I don't put titles on the shows. If I were to put a title on the show, I would call it March 14th, 2012, Hold Your Horses.
Good. That's good. I think that's a good message, because I think we all need to think about that and keep that in the forefront of our mind, because things are happening way too quickly in this day and age right now. It's just moving too fast, and I think even in terms of dating, it's moving too fast.
All right, so we have a title set for your next book.
Good.
Hold Your Horses, Don't Get Married Yet, Dr. Frankie Pichon.
Sounds good, Ken.
Sounds good. You are one of my favorite people to talk to. You'll come back on the show, and we'll talk more relationship advice.
Absolutely. I love being your guest. Oh. Anytime. Just let me know.
Well, all the best to the twins. I will see them soon, and have a great time at the diner.
All right.
All right. Thanks, Frankie.
Thank you. All right, Ken.
Bye.
Bye.
There were diamonds in the light. I was standing side by side as a shadow crosses mine. What it takes to form a life.
And we are joined for the first time ever. It's a new co-host, a straight woman to bed. Hi, Gina.
Hi.
Now, Gina, you are from Chicago.
I am.
And we are sitting in Phoenix, Arizona.
Yes.
And it's your first time co-hosting on This Show Is So Gay.
Yes.
Very exciting.
Very exciting.
Will you tell people?
that I'm co-hosting?
Yeah.
Sure, because I'm going to put it on my Facebook page,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yes.
Now, one of the reasons that we brought you on the show is because you have this very publicized, highly developed social theory about, I call it the 5-gay theory.
Yes.
Tell everyone about the 5-gay theory. You've gotten a lot of press over this.
I have gotten a lot of press. So I have 5 gay male friends, and as a single woman, they encouraged me to only have a certain number because too many, you know, I guess you can never have too many gays, but it's not, you know, I'm a single person trying to be dating and I can't just only hang out with gay men. So I have a top 5.
Okay. Now, everyone's going to write in. They're going to want to know. They're going to write into Ken at thisshowisogay.com and they're going to want to know, well, where is Ken in the top 5?
Well, Ken, fortunately, he's an out-of-town gay, so I didn't have to eliminate anyone from my current 5 to fit Ken in. So,
that's a good thing.
So he's safe. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm on the utility list.
Yes, correct.
The gay utility list. All right, so we're going to talk gay stories. Will you tell your parents? Will they listen to you on the radio?
Yes, sure.
It's very exciting.
It's very exciting.
It's very exciting. And tell everyone what you do, because everyone's always going to wonder, well, it's a new co-host. What does she do? You are not, I should say... You are not the first straight female co-host.
Okay.
So I don't want you to be nervous that you have to represent straight women everywhere.
Everywhere.
You don't.
Great. I am a social worker at a children's hospital.
And do any of your kids come out?
You know, no. That's a good question. I am trying to think if I've had anybody come out to me. No, none of my patients
have. Look at that.
Have.
All right.
Yeah.
Something to keep an eye out for.
Something to keep an eye out for.
All right. For sure. Well, you get to do the news with me.
Oh, exciting.
I feel like I haven't done news in a while. So
Okay. Do
you want to start with the thong story or the Facebook story?
Oh, let's start with the Facebook story.
Okay, let's start with the Facebook story. So in Rochester Hills, Michigan, that's not too far from you in Chicago.
No, I don't think so.
A student at Rochester College in Rochester Hills, Michigan was told by administrators she would have to stop promoting her lesbian pride to ensure continued on-campus housing.
Wow.
I know, right? Her name is Kia Zabel, and I might be getting her name wrong, pronouncing it wrong. That's actually her name. She's a sophomore at the private Christian college. She recently came out on Facebook and posted a timeline cover image that reads, "Out Proud Lesbian." She told WJBK News that Dean of Students Brian Cole, and that's, you know, I am a Dean of Students. Can you imagine that I would have done something like this? I didn't. I am not Brian Cole. That Dean of Students Brian Cole asked her to remove the photo or be forced to move off campus. Hmm. Out Proud Lesbian is not really consistent with the heritage of Rochester College and has proven to already be disruptive among fellow students who are really bothered by it. That's what Dean of Students Brian Cole said in his letter.
Okay.
Rochester College's student handbook says that intimate relationships were designed by, of course, Gina, God, right, and sex should only occur between, yes, Gina, a husband.
And a wife.
And a wife.
Got it.
A statement from a college spokesperson claims she was never threatened with expulsion. However, it does threaten her from being removed from college housing.
Yeah.
So she's got to reconcile, and you have a faith background.
Yes.
Reconciling her faith with her sexual orientation. Now, we've talked about this on the show. I would just say, well, obviously she should transfer. But that would mean she would have to choose between her faith and her education, which that seems not so right.
No, but I have a question because you're a dean of students.
Yes.
They're just going to, she just can't be on campus. So are they finding her new campus housing? Is she?
No. So they would just say living on campus. Her living on campus would be, I'll tell you what I would say. I would never say it about someone who's coming out as a lesbian.
Right.
But I would say, I would tell someone that their behavior is disruptive to the residential environment. And so you can stay a student here, but I'm sorry, you can no longer live in the dorms. So like a student who say, you know, maybe self-harm or is repeatedly making suicide threats or just being alcohol and other drug use that's really disruptive. That's something that I might step in as a dean of students and say,
okay. All
right, you can stay a student here, but you can't live in the dorms anymore.
Okay.
So what they're saying is that this violates their residential life, that being an out lesbian violates their residential community. Would you stay at the school? Or would you just find off-campus housing?
I don't know. I think it's kind of ridiculous. I think that I don't know. I mean, it's crazy. It's right. like crazy talk.
Because I can guarantee that nowhere in their dorm charter or in any documentation does it say, if you come out as a lesbian, you can no longer live in campus housing. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
Okay.
I don't know what I would do. I would think, is anybody coming out to support her? Students, her partner,
professor? Well, she's getting a lot of press on it. So that's really good. And it's funny, I'm looking at the comments section. Now, you know, all the drama for any story is always going down in the comments section. So a lot of people are saying, here, from this comment, I would never have gone to that college to begin with. Another comment, why did she choose that college? Another comment, leave that college.
Yeah.
But that's, it's, you know, we have no idea what her financial situation is or her faith situation. I would assume that you don't just stumble upon a Christian college.
No, she did a lot of research.
She did research, and this is consistent with, I'm sure, part of her background. Yeah. So,
and maybe she, and it's unfortunate she felt clearly comfortable enough at this stage of her life to make this declaration and to get no support from her.
From the dean of students. That's what I do for a living. Because we should say we're at the Blue Bag Conference. We're sitting at a student affairs conference right now. And I kind of want to go find someone from this school. I wonder if...
Are they here?
I should go look up if dean of students, Brian Cole, is here in Phoenix at our student affairs conference.
Yeah, you should.
I can get him on the show.
Yeah.
I could glitter bomb him. Have you seen that glitter bombing?
No. What is that?
I don't like it. It's where they find, these activists find anti-gay political figures or pundits, and they glitter bomb them. They just throw glitter on them. I just don't. I don't like things like that.
No.
I like strongly worded letters to the editor.
Right. That sounds better.
I think that's the way to go.
Glitter bombing is something that one of my 7-year-old patients would do.
After they put glue on the paper.
We would think that that's cute.
Yeah. No, this
Not
is
so
something
much for
they
girls.
Know. Newt Gingrich has been glitter bombed and Rick Santorum. I don't like that. I don't like confrontation in that way.
No, I know.
So naturally that leads to the thong story.
Of course.
Are you emotionally prepared?
I'm ready. I can't wait.
I should be very upfront with people. I did mention to Gina before the show that there would indeed be a thong story. So she is emotionally prepared even if she doesn't know what it is.
I'm ready.
A gay man claims in federal court that he has the, quote, dubious distinction of being the first person in San Diego history to be arrested for public nudity for wearing thong underwear under a gladiator kilt at a gay pride event.
Oh, okay.
Will X. Walters claims city police selectively enforced a municipal policy on public nudity which allows women to wear G-strings and thongs, but not gay men.
Oh.
Now, first of all, I'm going to go off topic on this. I would assume that the city police, it's not about gay men. I would assume it's just men.
Men in general, right.
I love that this has become a gay story. Walters also claims that San Diego Pride, quote, wholeheartedly endorsed the policy to curry favor with the police department, to appeal to mainstream sponsors, and to make the event palatable to straight people and families.
Okay.
Will Walters is a Hispanic gay man who owns the dubious distinction of being the only person in the history of the city of San Diego to be arrested and booked on a charge of public nudity, the complaint states. Mr. Walters was arrested for public nudity at the 2011 Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender Pride event while wearing an opaque gladiator-type kilt over underwear, which we should say Gina's wearing right now. Under any definition, he was not nude. I'm going to not read the rest of this. Now, what I find very interesting about this, because there is gay pride there in the Chicago.
Yes.
Have you been? Is there a parade?
There is a parade. We have, I think it's, yes, there's a, it's a weekend pride parade. Then Boys Town, or the kind of quote Boys Town, also does Halstead Day. So it's quite a big,
It's
a to-do. And if you ever are in Chicago during the marathon, the running through Boys Town is actually around mile 8, and it's quite a, we usually have the village people. And
oh, that's fun.
Oh, it's great fun. It's great fun.
Well, so one of the complaints, now it's this piece right now that I find particularly interesting, this to appeal to mainstream sponsors and to make the event palatable to straight people and families.
Yes.
Now, gay pride parades, now I've never, do you know, I lived in New York City for 11 years. I never once went to the gay pride parade.
Huh.
I thought it would be very overwhelming. I went to the Halloween parade once, but then I may have told this story on the show before, but I haven't told you this, right?
No.
I went to the Halloween parade, which is a very gay parade in New York City.
And what did you?
I wore some Robin Hood type outfit, but a guy was in an awkward Ensemble, and he fell on me. And the picture of him on me ended up on the front page of a local paper, which was fine, except that he was dressed as a feminine product. I didn't like it, so I haven't been back since. That's a lovely tale to tell your kids there at the hospital in Chicago. One of the big complaints that people have is that when mainstream media descends and covers gay pride parades, that they only grab the most sensational pictures. So the most scantily clad gay men.
Okay.
And other people get really frustrated and like, why aren't you showing the PFLAG parents who are marching with their kids? Mm-hmm. And I've always kind of gone back and forth on this because I think that the media does grab the most sensational images.
Sure.
But at the same time, they're part of the community as well.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see where this thong story ends up.
Yes.
I don't particularly think it's a gay male story.
No, I don't either. Because I imagine any, like you said, any male that was wearing a thong and a see-through kilt might find himself in the same.
Might find himself in the same one. So that's that. All right, now you are a pop culture aficionado.
Yes.
It's been so long. See, you have to come to Vermont because
I can't wait.
I would argue that my co-hosts don't often have pop culture knowledge, even as I love them to death. Pop singer Demi Lovato.
Oh, yeah, I do know about Demi Lovato.
Because your kids must love her.
I know about the teenage, or not even the teenage, the tween contingent I have.
I feel sometimes I'm a tween.
I can see that.
Yeah, thanks. Pop singer Demi Lovato, New Orleans Saints quarterback Drew Brees, and 20 members of Congress have joined Ellen DeGeneres in signing Katie Butler's petition to change the rating of the documentary Bully. Butler, a Michigan high school student who identifies as lesbian and who launched a change.org petition to change the R rating of the anti-bullying documentary to a more accessible PG-13 rating, personally delivered 200,000 signatures to the Motion Picture Association of America on March 7th. Representative Mike Honda, who's a Democrat from California, has issued a bipartisan letter signed by 20 additional members of Congress supporting Butler's petition. This is what he said in his letter, Representative Mike Honda. Quote, we are writing to express our sincere disappointment in the MPAA's decision to issue an R rating for the soon-to-be-released documentary Bully. This important project shows the real-life anguish of many teenagers in this country who are tormented, harassed, and bullied by their peers. This truth should be shared with as wide an audience as is appropriate and possible. We believe an R rating excludes the very audience for whom this film is desperately important. Mm-hmm. So there you go. I want to see this movie, Bully.
Yeah.
I would imagine that some of your kids have to deal with bullying.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I don't, it's interesting when you work, I think, with children who are medically sick, and oftentimes because of their treatment, there's a lot of school disruption, truthfully.
Right.
So there's a lot of homeschooling or homebound instruction. I don't know. I just think that being a teen, anything that makes you different is stressful enough. So the fact that I was at a conference and we were talking about the fact that when we were growing up, there wasn't any Twitter or texting or so stuff that maybe happened on a Friday was kind of forgotten about by Monday. And kids these days don't have that luxury.
Right.
I feel like everything becomes this bigger, but it's sad. It's sad when you hear about the kids that are afraid to go to school, and I don't know, it's just, it's really unfortunate.
We could use a movie like Bully, but rated R, I mean, so many people can't go to a rated R movie.
No, people won't go.
Yeah.
So Demi Lovato, how did Demi Lovato get involved?
She signed the petition. Okay. So all these folks are signing the petition, and hopefully that'll change. So we'll keep an eye on that story. Do you know that that's as quickly as your segment goes? Totally stressless.
It's over? Oh, no.
I wanted to do so much more, says Gina.
I think maybe this is going to launch my media career. I can't wait.
I swear to God, if you get some sort of offer based on this that I did not receive, I will not be happy.
But you would be supportive. You might not internally be happy, but outwardly, you'd be supportive.
Good times. So we should tell people there are, of course, a million and one ways to get in touch with us, which means about three ways to get in touch with us. You can drop us an email, send it to Ken at thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com. We have amazing, amazing guests coming up in the next couple weeks. I'm really excited about that. So check that out on thisshowissogay.com. And, of course, strolling over to the Facebook, type in "This Show Is So Gay" and like us on that page. And you should, right off of the Facebook page or thisshowisogay.com, you can subscribe to our show on iTunes, and then it just automatically downloads every week, and you don't even have to bother with it. That's your weekly dose of gay. Now this is the exciting part for you, because you get to do the end tagline with me.
Oh, good. What do I say?
So your key phrase that you need to know is "so gay."
So gay.
Okay? So you'll know when it happens. Okay. You'll know. So get out there, folks. Go do some amazing things. Of course, our thanks to Dr. Frankie Bashan, one of our favorite guests. So go start a relationship. Go on one of those internet networking dating sites and start emailing people, but don't get your expectations so high. Don't propose on the third date. I learned that earlier in the show. Wait till date number four. And while you're doing all of these things, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay? Don't you know, no, no. Don't you know?